Welcome to the Nobody Told Me That podcast. My name is Teresa Duncan, and my goal is to share information that you probably weren't thinking about. I love preparing my friends for situations that may come completely out of the blue. I also want to share with you many of the tidbits I picked up over the years. If you absolutely have to tune out before the end of the show, make sure to check out the show notes for more details on today's topics and information about my online class, Dental Insurance Design and Management. And thank you so much for making me a part of your day. I'd like to give a shout out to my friends at Synergy Dental Partners for sponsoring our podcast. They know how important the admin team is to our industry. Synergy is a group purchasing organization, or GPO. GPOs reduce your overhead with lower supply costs. They also have partnerships with labs and various service providers. You owe it to your revenue cycle to check them out. They're giving Nobody Told Me That listeners a 2-month free trial and a $200 Darby credit for new Darby customers. For more information, check out the link in the show notes or go to odysseymgmt.com/synergy. And we are back with another edition of Nobody Told Me That. And I have a repeat customer here, Lisa Greer from the CDA. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You are like the dental benefits expert over at CDA, California Dental Association.
That's right. Yeah.
So official title, dental benefits analyst. Is that
it? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So official. But honestly, like for my people that listen to the podcast, you guys know we love insurance and Lisa's like totally one of us. So
yes,
we'd seen each other at different groups and, you know, different meetings. And then once we started talking, we were like, ooh, coding nerd. Ooh, let's get in there. So I was really glad to get the call. You were like, your team was like, hey, let's get back on there. So let's go over what's going on in billing and insurance. And audience member, she is from California, which is, you know, probably one of the, it's probably the most regulated state, honestly.
Really? Like, yeah, it truly is. We don't have just one regulator in the state. We have two. So we have Department of Managed Healthcare and Department of Insurance. So we like to make things complicated over here.
Oh, bless. All right. Yeah. So, and honestly, like one of the things that I used to joke about when I was an individual consultant out there with clients, I would get a call from a California client and I had one before I realized, oh my gosh, this is like a whole new country when it comes to HR laws and all
of
that.
Oh my gosh, HR alone is, Yes, for sure. Yeah.
So being in California, I think what I'm trying to get to, listeners, is that the amount of regulations, the amount of oversight, compliance is super important in any state. But when it comes to California, it's so prevalent throughout the whole dental industry that what I love about CDA is that you guys have like different departments dedicated to helping your dentists.
We do.
You guys probably field like a ton of calls every day on this. I mean, how busy are you with individual dental questions?
So I'm in practice support. In my practice support department, we have four little pillars. So we field calls on regulatory compliance, employment, practice management, and then of course I do dental benefits, but we also have an entire legislative team that handles the laws and gets on board with that. But yeah, as far as the number of calls, I mean, hundreds of calls a day come into CDA.
Wow.
And we are the only state organization that has a practice support department that I work in. So it's fantastic. It's fantastic for our members.
Yeah, no doubt. And I always felt that whenever I would talk to you all, spoke out there a couple of times and always the focus with Lee and her group was always, this has to work for our members. This has to work for our members. It wasn't necessarily about just popping up numbers. And I mean, it was very, well, I like what you have to say, but we need it to say this more because that's what our members are interested in.
Sure.
So it's very, from a speaker point of view, it's an impressive transaction to have. I was really impressed
absolutely.
By that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned legislative, and I know that that's a different pillar, but there's some of that that affects dental.
Absolutely.
And so you had some movement on the virtual credit card bill.
Yes.
You've got some, you mentioned that there's some rules around coordination of benefits. Do you want to just give us a big rundown, keeping in mind that this is California, but this could happen in your state or it may already be happening in your state. So go ahead.
Sure, absolutely. So as of January 1st of 2025, we'll have AB 1048 that's going to go into effect that eliminates waiting periods and pre-existing conditions for policies, which is fantastic. One of the the worst case that we saw was a patient that had a denture that was 10 years old and had a new insurance policy, and they denied it because of pre-existing conditions for him to have a replacement denture. And we just thought, like, over a 10-year period of time, those wear down, the mouth changes. Yeah. So that really helped push us into that. And then waiting periods, you know, if you're paying on a policy and you're having to wait 6 months or sometimes 12 months for the, you know, the eligibility to kick in and be able to use your maximum. We also passed AB 952, which is the ERISA disclosure. So those self-funded versus the fully funded policies. So now January 1st of 25, the dental plans will have to disclose during the eligibility process whether a policy is regulated within the state and bound to our laws that we do pass to cover those. So it'll be at eligibility on plan documents. So the evidence of coverage booklets and then the ID cards too. So those are the two that we have passed. They'll go into effect January 1st. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, we're working on that virtual credit card bill. So that's SB 1369. So now I'm sure you get a ton of calls regarding those virtual credit cards, which, I mean, I'm all about get me the money as fast as you possibly can. But when it comes to those merchant processing fees on there, they're taking an additional, you know, up to 5% off of some of those checks, and you're already taking a discount as a contracted provider. So we're putting that into effect to where members will have to actually opt in to receiving those virtual credit cards, where now it's that opt-out situation. So it's a little bit more proactive versus reactive.
But I'm not a fan of it at all. You know, I try to stay Switzerland in a lot of ways, but when you say, okay, we're going to do this to you until you say uncle, like that just doesn't, it's not right. That's not a good relationship to have between people. Mm-hmm. These laws are going to apply to fully funded plans, the ones that are in-
That are regulated here,
Regulated by the state. So when you're saying the ERISA has to be disclosed, so that basically is telling the office, okay, all the state laws that you have may not apply to this, or will not apply to this plan, or will apply to this plan, which is, I hear this a lot in classes. How the heck do I find out if it's self-funded or fully funded? So that's beautiful. So on the ID card and on the policy.
On the policy and yes, when you're calling for eligibility also too, they're required to disclose it then at that time also too. So I always think about it. The biggest benefit I feel for that is when there's a non-duplication of benefits clause on a secondary policy. Yeah. So you don't always know that going into the coordination part of it, and you're expecting payment from that secondary policy and treatment is completed and lo and behold, that secondary policy doesn't pay. So I think that's going to be the biggest benefit.
The secondary insurance pieces, it's so challenging. And you know, you were in an office for a while. I was in an office and I just don't remember secondary being the huge issue that it is now. Like it was like sort of a pain in the butt when we ran into it, but we didn't run into it often. Right.
Yeah.
Now so many have it.
So many have the dual coverages. Well, I think there's so many more dual working families, dual working parents than there were, you know, back in, you know, when I started 25 years ago in dental. But I always tell the story when I first started in dental, I was really excited when kids would come into the ortho office and they had dual coverage, because I thought, like, this is just going to reduce your parents out of pocket and you're getting braces and I'm so excited for you. And then, you know, lo and behold, about a year into it, it was the opposite of like, oh, they've got dual coverage, you know, just like you said, it was such a pain at sometimes, you know, it was a pain to coordinate those benefits for the secondary coverage.
I always talk about this one family that we had where both parents, well, obviously the parents got divorced, both parents got remarried. So this kid came in with four coverage. Four sets of coverage. And it was, you know, if it had been just cleanings, I would have been fine. But it was, of course, he needed work. So trying to, and that was back when practice, well, some of them still can't handle three different plans. And so it was like just moving the plans around. And I just remember when they transferred, they were a military family. When they transferred, I was so happy. So happy. So I hated to see a patient go, but like, go.
Hate to see you go, but glad your insurance is. Yeah. I had to learn tertiary coverage, right? Nobody had three policies, let alone four. But here we are, lo and behold.
And I hear it's called quaternary coverage. Like,
oh,
who
really
wants to know that, really? You've got, so California's got some laws around coordination of benefits, though. Do you want to talk on that real quick?
We do. So the coordination of benefits law that we have requires the secondary to pay the lesser of the amount that it would have in absence of the primary or the patient's remaining out-of-pocket copayment. So again, when offices find that out is when that non-duplication of benefits clause shows up, and they think that this law will apply, and it's an ERISA policy that it doesn't apply to. So that's our coordination of benefits law that we have here in California.
We also
have the order of determination that is included in that coordination of benefit law also too. And so I always try to tell offices, the patient doesn't get to tell you what policy they want to use first and what policy they want to use second. We actually have a law in place for that.
See, that's, and honestly, like, that is so helpful because there's no ambiguity there.
Yeah.
As long as the office knows that that's
exactly
the law.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that hard though? How do you get the word out to everybody? I mean, just regular emails, your regular meetings, but is there something that they, it almost feels like if they're going to open a dental office in California, like they need to sign off that they know about the existing laws, but that's not,
no,
it's not practical, right?
No. And even think about when new dentists are graduating, there's not a lot of business school that's put into, you know, we put the time and effort into educating them on how to drill teeth and be chair side. So there's not a lot that goes into them being business, you know, business savvy and leaders. And of course, you know, dental is a whole nother monster and beast as it is on its own. So it takes them a while to learn that too. Yeah.
Do the dental schools welcome you to come in? And
I was actually just at UCSF a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, nice. They do. They love when we come in and speak to the students. And it's the early career dentists and the students are probably one of my most favorite group of people to talk to because they look at you like you have all this knowledge in your head and you leave there thinking like they think I'm the smartest person in the world. And and I don't get that often in my private life, you know? So anytime I can get that from these students, it's a little confidence boost. So yeah, I really enjoy going and speaking to the students. Yeah.
You got to get on the college circuit. That's what you
there you go.
Do, right.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You mentioned something about the waiting period. Now, but I understand the waiting period, like why an employer would want that put in save costs, you know,
cost containment. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Everybody hops jobs now. So like you get somebody in and they get two crowns and you're cooked, they leave. And then now your premium goes up. So I understand that. But it is a consumer protection for the employer. So I can see both employees.
Sure.
So I can see both points of view. But it sounds like when laws like that get passed, is it because the Department of Insurance or Department of Healthcare Management gets a ton of complaints? Like, help me understand what spurs these laws. Like, what makes it, what triggers it to the point that it gets now to your attention?
Well, it's definitely the consumers or the consumer complaints, but also if you're paying into a policy, I'm paying a portion of my premium of a policy that I'm not able to use. I'm not able to use some of those policy dollars for it. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of understand it a little bit where you want to build up a little bit of a bank of some of those premium dollars. But when I was in office, I used to get really creative with some of those where they wouldn't have a waiting period on major services, but they would for your restorative. So if the patient needed to have a root canal prior to the crown, well, the root canal didn't have a waiting period. So then we could get them in for the root canal and then wait and do the crown, you know, a little bit later. But yeah, it's really taxing for the offices to have to coordinate some of those things. And it's at times it's definitely unfair for those patients that are needing to use those dollars and they think that they've signed up for a policy that they can start using immediately and you know, they can't down the road. So
we were talking in the pregame, you have had classes where the question of billing UCR, billing all the codes comes up often in your classes. So
often,
pretend you're talking about that to a class full of people.
Yeah.
Let's go over why we need to UCR and why we're billing what we bill.
Sure. So UCR, we always start with the complaint is, well, it's labor intensive at the end when you're processing the EOB to have to adjust off and write off. And I always say, well, talk to your practice management software because most practice management software, as you know, will be able to post contracted rate to the ledger, but UCR goes out on the claim form. The most important reason for UCR being on the claim form is that UCR is your actual cost that you're reporting, the cost to do that treatment, do that procedure. Your contracted rate is the reduction that you're taking for being a contracted provider. So when you're submitting your contracted rate on those claim forms, you're really kind of watering down the fees of the cost of it is for the treatment. And as you know, there's so much data that gets pulled from those claim forms and shared. So if you're constantly submitting your contracted rate versus your UCR, you're really just kind of watering down the fees for everyone. And also on a rare occasion, if the dental plan did increase a contracted fee. If you're submitting the old contracted fee and they increased it, well, they're legally required to pay what's on the claim form. They're not going to pay the new fee. They're going to pay it what you have listed on that claim form. So a couple of really good reasons to list the UCR in the claim forms is, you know, to keep the data, keep the fees, you know, the data in line and actual versus the contracted rates.
So one pushback I've heard on that is, well, if I send in my full fee and the patient sees it on the EOB, it's going to turn them into more of a PPO patient because they're going to see how expensive it is to come to me mm-hmm. versus if it was PPO. And, you know, the conversation I have with them, and let me know if you have a different one too, because I mean, this can help everyone. What I usually say to them is, if you're not comfortable with the high fee, if you perceive it as to be a too high of a fee, that's a separate conversation. You need to really take a look at like what your cost sure. of goods is, what your overhead is. You know, are you billing just because you hear the guy down the street is billing this? Like, what if you're not comfortable with your full fees? That's a different conversation than will sure. the patient be scared of it? You know,
sure, sure.
So that's kind of my saying to them. Do you have people saying, oh, it's just easier to do low fees on the EOB? I mean,
the conversation that I have is I think your UCR should be listed everywhere. It should be on your, when you're treatment planning, you should be informing the patient of the usual and customary rates mm-hmm. because you always say, this is the cost if you had no insurance, no dental coverage whatsoever. This is the cash fee. Well, your great insurance also reduces it to this and they pay in towards it. So for me, I feel like it's easier for the patient to understand, like I do have good insurance coverage and I do, you know, some of those things. So that's the reason why I like to see UCR everywhere. Like this yeah. is my actual cost. This is the discount you get by coming to a contractor provider. And this is what your plan pays into it also too. But
well, and you also have secondary insurance. You've got two different fee schedules that you got to deal with. So mm-hmm. which one are you yeah. going to be putting on the claim form? Like why have that discussion?
Just exactly.
The full fee yeah. on the claim form. Wait for everything exactly. to come back in and take care of it. So
yeah.
One thing that I've been hearing, I'm trying to kind of track this down and see about it. We talked a little bit about in the pregame, just want to kind of make it a consumer awareness point, I guess, for mm-hmm. our listeners. There's a thing going around where you would collect the coinsurance amount of the full UCR, say mm-hmm. you're a Delta provider, yeah. you're not collecting a coinsurance based on the Delta fees, you're collecting it based on your full fees. So you're going to get paid by the patient more than they should have. So you're actually sure. collecting yeah. more. And then the follow-up thought on that is then you use that amount to get them to get more work done because, oh, now they have a credit, right? Yeah. But yeah. I mean, you and I have spent a lot of time looking at contracts. I'm going to go double check it, but I have a funny feeling that most of the contracts say you have an obligation to collect what the patient's coinsurance is and not more. Yeah. So yeah. Do you feel like you've seen that before?
I don't have to double check the contracts. I know it's in almost every dental plan. I've seen many contracts yeah. and yeah, it's absolutely written in there that you can't collect anything more than what the patient's yeah. calculated copayment is for those. So yeah.
Well, and
why have all of that? Like what an AR nightmare, right? Why have all those credits sitting on your account? And if you're looking at selling your practice also too, they're looking at those credits negatively. They're not looking at them as a positive. So there's mm-hmm. there's a lot of reasons for not holding onto those credits.
Well, and if you have consumer complaints too, like what if you're violating, I mean, I don't know what California's is, but every state has unclaimed funds law where if mm-hmm. you're holding onto a patient's credit yeah. for longer, you have yeah. to actually pay the state. The state has to hold on to it. What is yeah. California's? Do you know?
California's, off the top of my head, I believe that you have to report it within 365 days for okay. California and send it to the unclaimed property. Yeah.
Okay. So listeners, just yeah. if you've never heard of this, because we get a lot of new people to dentistry. So sure. the unclaimed funds, every state has a law on this. So basically mm-hmm. what Lisa was saying is in California, if you have a credit on the account and you're attempting to give it back to the patient, and the patient for some reason isn't responding or whatever, you have to get some sort of, you know, agreement that the patient says, hold it on the account because I'm going to get some work done. That's fine. You make sure. you document yeah. it. You have that.
Yeah.
But if you're holding on to it and there's no contact with the patient, you can't, it's not just free money. You have to
right.
pay that back to the state. It's called unclaimed funds. And mm-hmm. then the state gets to hold on to it and earn interest on it, of course.
Sure.
They yeah. publish a registry where mm-hmm. you go and you can look it up. And it's funny because my husband does this like every couple of years and there's always some money due back to either my parents or us, right?
Yeah. I do the same thing.
yeah. And yeah. so, and yeah. you guys should check it because you never know, maybe you overpaid somewhere.
Yeah.
But that is one thing I know when I used to do in-office trainings, I would say, wow, you guys have a lot of credits. Are you familiar with the unclaimed funds? And I don't think anybody I ever trained knew about unclaimed funds. I don't think that's something that we talk about often enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Sending that money back. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you can get fined by the state, I believe, if there's enough patient complaints on it.
So, oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So
I'm
don't
sure,
mess yeah. around with that. I know Virginia, I believe, is a year too. So that's yeah. where I do business here. So Okay, so wow, we already threw a lot of them out there on like stuff that they have to pay attention to.
Sure. You mentioned also too submitting on the claim form all of the even if it's a non-covered procedure, non-covered treatment. So I always use for when I'm doing presentations, I always use the example. There's a lot of policies out there that the buildup is inclusive of the crown prep if it's done on the same day. Mm-hmm. Well, same theory behind that is that when you're submitting even the non-covered procedures on the claim form, that's the actual cost to do that treatment. So yeah. You know that you're going to take a write-off for the buildup if it's done on the same day of the crown, but it's not that you didn't do the buildup. It's still there. You still did the buildup. So that's the other reason behind submitting everything, even if it's a non-covered procedure on the claim form.
So I'm not going to say a ton of success. I used to be a lot more successful at getting buildups paid than I used to be. I mean, I just think that they've become very stringent on it, but I'm starting to see where I'm getting some more success, and some of the billers that I talk to are getting success because with same day crowns now, there is no opportunity to do one day and then have them come back. You just don't do
it. I mean, not that. And why would you do that to have the patient inconvenienced as well? So too,
Never understood that. Yeah. Right? So now with having good clinical notes as to why the, you know, amount of tooth structure missing and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So what we find a lot is that the buildups are auto adjudicated to be inclusive. And so that's why you need somebody who's trained to know to look at appeals and question everything. And I remember talking to one dentist and he said, he took a class and he said, so you mean to tell me that I should try to appeal my crown buildups? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And he looked at the girl and the girl looked at him and she said, nobody ever told me that. And I was like, oh, I wonder why I named my podcast that.
Right?
But she said, nobody.
Yo, that's a great name for a podcast.
She said, nobody ever told me. He goes, well, I never knew. And she goes, I didn't know. And they were both looking at each other. And I had to be like, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Usually you can go back. You have a year. Go pull up your reports and go back and see. And you know what? If you can recover a third of those, then you've learned something. It's
exactly.
good.
Exactly.
So don't beat yourself up over it. But I always wonder, like, these offices that never appeal anything. Like,
oh my gosh.
You know?
I am like, I say all the time, appeal it, file an appeal, file an appeal. Oh. And I'm like a broken record when it comes to that. And and there's so many reasons behind it. Like, we have a law that they have to respond. You know, once you appeal, it sets in place a timestamp that they have to make a decision on it within 45 days. So if you think that they're not listening to you, like, that requires them to make a decision on it. So, you know, that starts it. But then also too, the amount of appeals and grievances that are filed against a plan, those plans have to report those to Department of Managed Healthcare and the Department of Insurance. And so if they start, the regulators start to see that these plans are having appeals and grievances for the same type of procedures over and over again, they'll look at them and they'll fine them if they see that it's, you know, against any insurance code. So that's why I'm a big appeal everything, appeal it. And the computers, auto adjudication, who knows? You know.
Well, and so that actually on the medical side, I know you've heard about this, but the Cigna is under investigation for utilizing AI in their auto adjudication because the amount of appeals and patient complaints, that actually is what triggered it because like they didn't have, it just went up in volume, the amount of appeals and all that. And that kind of had people looking, wait a second. So what I'm talking about, people, is that they were accused of using AI in their benefit determinations because things were just getting auto adjudicated so swiftly. So they're going through the discovery and all of that now, but that actually is bringing on more legislation in the medical side. I don't know. I haven't seen any dental legislation
any
about
movement
AI
on that side.
And claims adjudication, but it's going to trickle down from medical. But we're starting to enter that world where, you know, how much of AI is being used. It's not even images. It's how is it being used in just the processing of the claim. So I feel like we're going into a whole wild new world when it comes
absolutely.
To that. It'll be interesting to watch.
I mean, it's fantastic because it helps with a little bit more prompt payment. But when it's situation like those, that the computer's just denying it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got to look like, because it's not like it's sitting up there thinking somebody's programmed a prompt or a command to do that. So who is that? Who's the who's the AI master that's denying all of our claims?
It's not you or I.
Not at all.
No.
Okay, so let's go back to the CDT prepper usage. Give us a couple most common, you know, discussions that you have in your classes about CDT codes and proper usage of them.
Well, CDT, if they're using the outdated code, of course, you know they're going to submit a claim with an outdated code and it's going to get denied. And how long does it take for a denied claim to circle back around? I mean, sometimes it's 90 days by the time that you realize it's been denied and you realize the reason why it's been denied, and then you get the new claim, you know, the corrected claim submitted. So that's probably the number one is that offices are using these outdated codes. And I don't know if it surprises you as much as it surprises me. These offices, they're not getting the CDT code books every year. They're not getting new CDT code sets every year. And so there's times where an office, you know, they'll ask me about a code and I'm like, that was deleted in 2012.
Well, it kind of is interesting. A couple years ago, I remember somebody said, oh, I'm cleaning out my closet and I have all these old CDT books if anybody wants it. And they were like 4 years old. And people were like, let me have it. I need one. I need one. I'm going, oh my gosh, like, it's outdated already. And so
I think I have codes. I have, I have from 2017. I have codes. Yeah. So I have them all lined up because it's just like a cute little rainbow of all my little code books. So I always keep them.
And sometimes I'm so nerdy. I'm like, I wonder when that code went into effect. Let me look.
I do the same thing.
Coding nerds out there listening. This is what happens when we get together. I'm sure there's other rainbow displays of code books on other
shelves. I'm sure. So I think that's probably the number one is using the outdated codes, but also some misusage. We were talking about this in the pregame, some misusage of some exam codes and how that comes back with audits down the road where it's been found that, you know, the code isn't necessarily the right code to be using for it. But then again, we look at the computers auto adjudicating it just as a code. And then once they start to kind of look into it, you know, it's a little bit of misuse of the codes.
Yeah, because there's unintended misuse of the code that happens occasionally. Mm-hmm. But then when there's intended use, then that's a pattern. Yeah. And then, oh boy, you better know a lawyer.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There are dental insurance lawyers that focus on this, unfortunately. So if you ever get a chance to listen to any that come your way, if you're not in California, you know, if you ever hear a dental insurance lawyer give a talk, you gotta listen, because it's crazy the fines that they get. There was one, I remember talking to this one, and he was saying just the amount, it was like, I want to say $300,000 in just PAs.
Oh,
just
man.
The x-rays, because they were not of diagnostic quality. They were, you know, open bites, overlap, all that kind of stuff. And then there was also being charging for it. And although it's there's nothing in the documentation that it was read. And so just hundreds of thousands of dollars just on PAs. So, and I remember thinking, you should be happy that they stopped at PAs. Like, they could have gone to bite wings. They could have gone to FMXs, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Diagnostic quality x-rays, really, we see those pop up in audits all of the time when, you know, they're looking at the x-rays and I have to explain to the doctor, well, you submitted for this, but it's really not diagnostic quality. So,
And they're like, you know, well, we took it. So
exactly. Sure you
that
did.
That doesn't mean anything, you know?
Exactly.
And I've been saying in classes, I don't think you need to worry about what the insurance carrier thinks of your x-ray. Like, that's the least of my concerns. You have to worry, will a judge or a jury take a look at this x-ray and say, why did you do that? Like if you take an x-ray to that level, the insurance carriers are going to be fine. But so diagnostic quality, let's just kind of brainstorm this real quick. So clear, able to read accurately shows what it's like. If it's a PA, it shows the apex and everything. Bite wing shows
no cone cuts. Cone cuts. Oh my gosh. Cone cuts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cone cuts. Yeah.
And even the, what is that called? The exposure level.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The film. And so if you've got a staff member that takes terrible x-rays, like that's not okay. You got to correct that.
And I think digital x-rays have really helped quite a bit in the last several years, being able to take care of some of those things. But, you know, again, you know, if the image is too dark, if the image is too light, if there's a cone cut, if it's,
It's pretty exciting what they're doing, though, like being able to show the patient on the AI image, like where it is, like they can totally see it. One thing that the consultant carriers have been telling me is that if you're going to send in an AI enhanced image, you have to send in the original. You can't just send in the AI enhanced image. They want to see the original and the AI. And then here's what's interesting too, is the doctor, the provider is going to take a look at that and maybe annotate it, mark it up. So they'll send the original, send the marked up one. the carrier has their own AI that's going to evaluate the image too.
The original, yeah.
So yeah. I would love to see what they come up with. Like, I don't know if we're ever going to see that on the provider's end, but I would love sure. to see what the carriers come up with, because they also are going to run the AI on that original image, and it'll be interesting to see, like, you know,
what they determine is if there's anything different. Yeah, that would be a fun little project. Yeah
I'm curious about that. And then they've got, now they're looking to be able to show bone level, have the AI just do kind of a visual representation of bone level. That's like, wow. Lisa, when you and I started, did you even imagine
this? I talk quite often to offices that have their scaling root planning denied, where when I first started, we just sent in a perio chart with the numbers on it. We didn't even mark bleeding. We didn't mark anything else. And so now, because it's been such an overdiagnosed procedure, that there's some guide rails on it now. So it makes it a little bit interesting. It's nice to see, you know, some protections put in place for patients, but also on the other hand too, it's making our documentation a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that's a bad thing, right?
No.
So talk to me about what the questions are around SRP and what is the most common pain point that you're hearing, other than it not getting covered? What is it about it not being covered?
I think a lot of the biggest issue they get is they think that it's just 4 millimeters across the board for every plan. And it's not always the case. You know, some plans are wanting, you know, 5, you know, millimeter or greater pockets. So I understand from a doctor's standpoint what the correct procedure is to be done, but I have to always talk to them and say, it just doesn't necessarily mean the plan is going to consider it a covered. So, you know, it's not just 4 millimeters across the board anymore. There's a lot of things that go into place for it.
Just a reminder to check out the companies who support the show. My friends at Synergy Dental Partners are offering 2 free months to try out their lower prices for labs, supplies, and select software services. To sign up, visit odysseymgmt.com/synergy, and the link is also in the show notes.
Yeah. Do you see more doctors using staging and grading in their documentation? Is that?
I wish that's what I saw a little bit more of, but no, unfortunately, we're not seeing. And I send that over from the American Academy of Periodontology all the time. Send them over the information from the ADA as well, also too. So this is what they're looking for.
Yeah. I'm just like, go back, change your template, take a look at your template, make that part of your comprehensive, but it hasn't picked up. And I will tell you that offices that I know that are incorporating it, they don't get as many denials. They don't, especially when it comes to 4910s and have going past the 2-year offices. So if you're not familiar, listeners, if you are doing if you did the scaling root planning, the osteosurgery, usually most plans after 2 years kind of consider it to be healed, which doesn't make a lot of sense. And so they're like, we're not paying $49.10 after 2 years. Well, if you can show that their rate of healing is terrible, or maybe they're still going
their home care
direction,
is the best. And
then you can get that extended. I mean, I've been able to get that. I'm not going to say 100%, but I've been able to get that extended in some of other people. So
let's talk about 49.10 and the fact that the new ADA claim form has date of last SRPs on the claim form now.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I'm excited about that. I am excited because it sounds like they listened, but at the same time, the electronic data field that, you know, on the claim forms, it's not represented in the clearinghouses yet. Like, they're still trying to figure out where to put that. So I feel like it's a good, like, we dipped our toe in the water. you know, we just got to make sure we stay wet, right? Like, we got to make sure it works.
Yeah, so we have to go all in.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've heard the new claim form. There's still, I think, is it Eaglesoft that they're not even ready for it yet? Like, I think they're like a month or two out before they implement that into the software.
I haven't heard that.
Maybe that's changed, but as of, I mean, we're late March here. Mm-hmm. That's still, I was told summer that it wouldn't be available in the new software packages too. So,
which is unfortunate because it's, you know, like the ADA codes that change every year, they knew this change was happening. So
So that's the 2024 claim form. If you're not using that, at least the 2019 claim form, people, the 2012 shouldn't be anywhere in rotation now.
I still see some of those coming out.
It's kind of funny. So, but with everything that we have to do at the front, like, sometimes these things do get biased. So it's super important to keep up with classes like what you guys offer, you know, podcasts like this and all. How is it going with the Change Healthcare thing? Have you been getting a lot of calls?
I fortunately haven't been getting the calls on it. Our regulatory compliance has been getting some of the calls on it. So they're looking at the data breach and data breach coverage and things like that. I've gotten a few calls on it. More so, they're upset that our state dental plan, the Medi-Cal Dental, doesn't have a checks and balance in place for this one. So there's some upset providers out there for that. But yeah, that was a huge shakeup, and it was across all social media. I'm sure you saw it. I saw your video, your podcast that you did not too long ago regarding it was, right off the very first, a couple of days after it had happened. So yeah, it was a huge shakeup.
So is Medi-Cal back to paying? Like, is cash flow going now? Because they were
There.
using change for claims and payments, right?
Yeah, they're working on it. They're working on it. So we have some of in our public policy that's reaching out to them and trying to work through some of those kinks, but.
A friend of mine owns a small medical billing company. She only works with doctors, medical doctors. And she said something like 80% of her clients were strictly change, and they're all like looking for short-term loans. And her company, even because they don't get paid if
Oh
nothing's
gosh,
going. So she's even looking, she was looking for a short-term loan for her business. So this is just such a huge
It was a
trickle down all
huge,
over.
yeah,
So all,
absolutely,
and
yeah.
even the dental billers that do it, have a third party service. They're like, well, we're not getting paid either. So it's
Yeah.
just all over the place. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think the Medi-Cal providers have a point though. I think that's something that our industry has to look at. Like, these exclusive agreements are not helpful when something
Yeah.
like this happens.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they tried to mislead us, because who knows what was going on, and I wouldn't ever want to be in their shoes. But for a change to say there was no breach at the provider level seems very premature, I thought, for them to say that. You don't know. You don't know what
Sure.
breaches are to come. I don't even think we've started that investigation is going to start now. Like, now we're going to hear about all these things. So
Yeah.
when they're calling your offices, are they worried about their exposure
There were
to the
yeah, that's
breach?
yeah, that's why the regulatory compliance, that's why my colleagues over in regulatory compliance are getting those calls based off of that, is that they're concerned about how it, has any of their information been compromised.
Well,
Yeah.
and I know Office of Civil Rights just said that they're not going after providers for that, because, I guess kind
It was
of.
outside of their hands really at that point. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but at some point, I mean, if you do determine you have a breach, though, that does, like, OCR is not coming
There's
after you. But if you have a breach, you still got to follow the
right. There's
rules.
so much work that goes into a breach. There's so much work that goes into it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I HIPAA officers, my hat's off to you, because I don't want to do it.
Really?
Cybersecurity
Yeah.
people, I don't want to do
Yeah.
it. Yeah, so
Yeah.
thank
Yeah.
God there's experts out there. And then when they got the call, I was like, I got the call to the interviews. I said, only as it pertains to dental claims. Don't ask me anything about
Yeah.
viruses or anything. I
Exactly.
don't know anything about it. So
Yeah.
hopefully we come out okay. But I think it is important
With a
for us to
safety net
have
in place,
choice.
hopefully. Yeah. We come out okay with a safety net in place. Yeah.
Well, and that goes back to, I mean, you're part of the whole practice management department there. I mean, is that something you guys go into when you're teaching basic businesses to have sort of a cushion of cash reserves in order to kind of mitigate these types of things?
I mean, not necessarily to mitigate that, but just in general to have some sort of a reserve there in place for who knows what could come up of different things. But yeah, it's also like, your personal savings. How much can I have, and especially with how offices have been impacted since the pandemic as far as cash flow coming in, it's not
For
always
sure.
easy to have that reserve sitting there that you had 3 years ago, 5 years ago. So
All right. So let me give you a magic wand. I'm going to
okay.
give you a crystal ball and a magic wand here,
Okay.
Lisa. And if you could wave your magic wand, how would you fix documentation in the dental world? I want to hear what you
Oh,
have to say about that. I
how would
know.
I
See, but
fix?
I knew that I hear the sigh, but I also
Yeah.
hear the, ooh, I have a lot to say.
Yes. How would I fix documentation? Are we saying from the office perspective?
Like, what could offices do?
Don't copy and paste your notes. Don't copy and paste your notes. Yeah.
Did you hear that, people? Did
Yeah.
you hear
Don't
that?
copy and paste your notes, because it always comes up in an audit. PICS or it didn't happen. I say that all the time. Like intraoral cameras in an office and an operatory is makes a huge difference, I think, with documentation. And document the day of the procedure. Don't wait and do it on the weekend, because plans, when they're going through audits, will take a look at that. And if their notes are not matching on the different days, they're gonna question it. Yeah.
All right. So what if I'm swamped? I had three people call out, like what's an acceptable a day?
Yeah, a day. Yeah. Okay. A day. Yeah, sure. A day. All right. Yeah. But all right. I mean, we see offices that are not documenting and not completing their treatment for a week afterwards. And, you know, looks a little odd when your x-rays state one day, but then the treatment is charged out on a whole different day. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then going back in, oh, here's a question for you. And I know this is going to vary state by state. So I was just interested. When the record is signed, does it have to be in California signed by the doctor or can the assistant sign it?
No, it has to. It's the doctor's license. It's the doctor's license on the line for that.
So I see this everywhere. I see this everywhere. When somebody sends me a clinical note to say, is this okay? It's never okay. I mean, I hate to say it, it's never okay. There's always something that you could have improved in the clinical notes, but by far I see the assistant's initials and I'll hear, you know, when I push back, well, as the assistant, I only work with this doctor. So of course it would be me, but that doesn't fly, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, as far as state laws, it doesn't. Yeah. We encourage even associate dentists to do a chart audit and to go back and take a look and see what's been billed out, what's been submitted, what's coming back on the EOBs. We've seen where we've looked at day sheets that the exam was charged out under the hygienist's code. So, you know, hygienists can't do exams in California. So certain things like that. So we always encourage our associates just to not wash your hands of it, not think that someone else is taking care of it. It's your license that's on the line. So you have to make sure that you're protecting your license as much as possible.
So I can see the rationale of the hygienist getting the credit for the exam, because maybe that's part of the structure of the compensation, but on the day sheet, it shouldn't say the hygiene initials.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
it's beyond their scope. In California, it's beyond their scope.
In most states it is. Yeah. So interesting. Okay. Cause I'm thinking about a couple of offices that I know of now that the hygienist gets credit for the exam because it's happening in that operatory.
Yeah.
But obviously the doctor does the eval.
Yeah, exactly. If the hygienist is being financially compensated for it as a, you know, part of their contract, their employment contract, that's one thing. But as far as it being charged out, the doctor still needs to do the exam. The doctor still needs to make the notes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I see often is no review of medical history or medical history reviewed. That's it. That's it. Medical history reviewed. And then I also see no blood pressure. Like I'll see the template and it's blank. Like the numbers are blank. They're not added in there. Is it medical history reviewed? Is that enough or not really?
Medical history reviewed, no changes noted. Yeah.
Okay.
It's similar to, I kind of think about it when you have a patient that comes in to the office and they're an existing patient and you ask them the question, has anything changed since you were here last? Mm-hmm. Their immediate response is no. You know, they don't have to think through it. But when we're talking about insurance, do you still have XYZ insurance through ABC company? It makes them start to think a little bit. I think the medical history is along the same lines. Hey, we have it noted that you have, you know, you're on this medication, you have this medical condition, you have that. Has anything changed on it since then? Instead of just asking them a blanket question, has anything changed? Because my immediate reaction to that is no.
Right. And then afterwards you go home, you're like, oh, I had that big surgery over Christmas.
Exactly.
I totally forgot to tell.
Because
6 months is a long time that we see
it them. Sure is. Yeah.
A lot of things change.
Yeah.
Okay. So when a doctor gets a letter from the carrier that they're going through an audit, do they call a lawyer immediately? Did I say lawyer? I meant carrier. I don't know what I said. So letter from carrier,
letter
going
from
to doctor. Does the doctor call a lawyer immediately? What do they normally do? They call you freaked out or do they call a lawyer? Like, what do they do?
I hope they call me freaked out first. Yeah. I know there's a lot of offices that go through and do the audit process on their own. We have fantastic resources. And honestly, people think that I'm sick sometimes when I say this, but audits are one of my most favorite things to work with our members on because it's usually like a 3 to 6 month time period from the date of the first letter to the audit to the report that comes back. So I get to work with our members for quite a bit on those. But I hope they call me panicking a little bit so I can talk them down from the ledge and explain to them the reason why the audits. And I truly do like working with our members with audits when it comes to the audits.
Well, and honestly, I don't think it sounds weird to be excited about that because if you can catch them before the audit letter, that's even better, right?
Like,
do they, hopefully you get calls from people that like, I want to make sure I'm okay. Do they do it preventatively or not really?
No, typically they don't. Man. Well, I mean, they might, but they're not telling me that they're doing it preventatively. So I usually get them when they get that first letter and they are in kind of a panic mode about it, but
So what kind of workshops do you guys do around the state? So, because I'm thinking, wow, an audit workshop would, I'd sign up for that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we actually, I'm looking for Presents May of 25. I will probably be doing a course on auditing. Fortunately, I go to the same auditing courses to be trained for to do the audits that most of the dentists that go through the insurance that work for the dental plans, I go through that same course. So I have an idea of what they're looking for. So yeah, I think Presents 25 in May of 25, I think I'm going to do an audit course. Yeah.
Nice. That's yeah. in Anaheim.
That's CDA in Anaheim.
Presents. Mm-hmm. Yep. Huge meeting. Great meeting.
Yeah.
Always the latest and greatest technology too.
Yeah.
Like that in Chicago midwinter, you guys like roll out all the cool things.
Yeah. So, Presents Anaheim is great. Yeah.
And then you also, your colleagues present other stuff too. Like what type of workshops does CDA present at Presents?
we always have information on regulatory compliance and HIPAA. We've got two or three employment courses that are out there. I think I have four courses in Anaheim in May this year. We have a huge dental team summit that's going to be in great. Anaheim this year. There's always so much information out there that we present. If I had to guess, I think between the four of us, there's probably over 20 courses that we're going to do and some panels and yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And then you also go around to the different constituent associations too, right?
Like yeah. The components. Yeah. There. Yep. I was actually just in Fresno and San Jose last weekend. The month prior to that, I was in San Diego and in Pasadena. So all over the place. Yeah.
What a tough life you have.
I know. Racking up those frequent flyer miles. Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
So tell me about this team summit. That's exciting. You guys do a team summit?
It is exciting. It's all day on Friday. Okay. So it's all day. It's for your dental team. So we have a leadership track. We have a practice management track. I have a dental benefit plan track. So it's going to be a little bit smaller, but more detailed and intimate. So the majority of courses that we do are lecture style, right? You're familiar with that, but this is going to be a little bit smaller. We're going to have some homework and some additional breakout sessions here and there, but it's just going to be a little bit more in-depth information as far as the different areas of the leadership and the practice management and the dental benefit plans.
Man, fantastic. Yeah. I wish like I could clone y'all's department and put it around the country. I mean, honestly, it's just it's so necessary. And some of it's no knock on the other state associations. They do the best that they can, but sometimes they just don't have the resources.
Sure, you know, exactly.
Some of these smaller state associations are like one or two people managing all of the dental inquiries. So
even some of our components within the state, you know, we have a component and executive director that might only work part-time and then work part-time in an office because the component is so small. So even within our state, we have those smaller components as well. So too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you have to track not just state, but you have to track like LA, you have to track San Francisco and all of that.
Yeah.
So,
and really when COVID hit and they had all of the different, you know, mandates and mask mandates and all of that, the 32 counties that we had to deal with, you know, from that was crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even want to think about it. I don't think I have any follow-up questions on that because I don't want to think about it. That's just a lot, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's in the past.
We don't think about that C word thing. Yeah. All right. Anything else coming up that not billing wise, but legislation? I just want to make sure we got everything, virtual credit card and all of that, just because we kind of geek out about that stuff. Is there anything that the members are asking for, like network transparency? Do you have something on the books on network transparency?
We do. We have a network leasing law, that requires transparency of the networks that are being leased and then the ability to be able to opt out of those also too. So we do have that in place. Gosh, there's so much regulation that we have as far as around the dental plans that, you know, it's hard for me to keep them straight, but we were looking at an assignment of benefits bill this year, but we pulled it back just certain reasons. We pulled it back and are focusing on the virtual credit card this year.
Okay. Well, assignment of benefits would be great. I mean, the whole being out of network is problematic when you just don't know if you're going to get paid or not. But I would love to see that on a national level because the whole thing with the self-funded plans, I mean, it's really difficult to teach it. I mean, I know you know what I'm talking about. Like we teach, here's the rules around it, but big, huge, but half of your plans are going to go this way and half your plans are going to go that way.
Yeah. Half of the PPO policies in the state are self-funded. And so those laws don't apply to it. So you hit the nail on the head right there with the 50%.
It's very frustrating. So how many questions are you getting about Medicare Advantage in your classes? Like,
I'm not getting a ton, but I'm really kind of promoting it because the amount of people that have been that are now included in it, it's a growing population. And some of those Medicare Advantage plans are good plans for both the patient and for the office also too. So I encourage them to at least look at them, look into the Medicare Advantage plans. There's still that thought out there that if you opt out of traditional Medicare, then you can't take the Medicare Advantage plans. And I have to tell them, no, that changed. I think it was at 22 that changed. Was it
Yeah,
2022 that
I
changed?
want to
So
say 22, 20. Yeah, I think 22. Yeah.
So I always encourage them, look into it. Just because you opt out of traditional Medicare doesn't mean that you can't take some of those Medicare Advantage plans. And depending on what your demographic is, I mean, I managed an office that was right next to a large retirement community. We took all of those Medicare Advantage plans. You know,
Yeah.
those were our people, those were our patients. So
Well, I mean, listen, everybody's living older. I mean, as the closer I get to retirement, I'm like, man, everybody's old. Like, if the getting
what are we going
older.
to do when you retire?
Oh, you know what? I don't care. No, I'm kidding. No, I it's going to be hard. I don't know how people actually retire. Let's be honest. Like, my dad retired
Exactly.
and I see him. He's like always itching to go do something, you know? So
Yeah,
I'll probably
yeah.
be this. I'll probably, Lisa, what you doing? So
Yeah.
doing that. But the thing is, you're right though. The plans are pretty amazing. Both my parents, we signed them up with a Humana plan, $3,000 max.
Oh, that's a great max. Yeah.
And they pay on UCR. And when we had some crowns done on both of them, I remember getting the check and like almost not wanting to cash it because I was like, they're going to come back for this. They're going to come back
Yeah.
for it. But they didn't. And so, but I think the amount of money these plans are getting to administer these Medicare Advantage plans, like they're making money still, even with these
Sure.
plan designs. So,
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, they're going to do an actuarial. There's going to be a reckoning, right? There's
Yeah.
going to be like, well, yeah, we got to cut back. But for right now, it seems to be a
Yeah.
pretty good plan to have. The fraud, waste, and abuse training comes up a lot
It
that
does.
they're not
Yeah.
aware of that.
Yeah.
What do offices say when you tell them, hey, about these Medicare Advantage plans, like having to take this
Was,
fraud, waste, abuse training?
but I mean, in reality, I think it's great, even if you aren't taking Medicare Advantage plan, to be able to have like an idea of what they're looking for some of that. I mean, we're all against fraud, waste, and abuse, right? So even if you aren't taking any of those Medicare Advantage plans, the training is eye-opening sometimes. So
Yeah. I
yeah.
think
And it's not very taxing. It's not, you know, days at a time. It's a pretty easy training.
I personally would like to see that. I mean, I hate to want anything mandated because that's totally not what I do, but
Sure.
I almost would love to encourage offices, like you just said, to do fraud, waste, and abuse training. All the new employees coming in, especially you have an associate that may have come from an office that was a little shady. You've got to kind
Yeah.
of reset those expectations, or else they're going to want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And you and I are out on the road a lot. We talk to a lot of people. We've heard some really shady things being taught out there, and I want them to at least know that there is some sort of code of ethics out there, that there is some, you know, it's always put
Yeah.
the patient first.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's tough. Last time we talked about doctors getting out of network and what that looks like in California. What are you seeing? Seeing a trend? Is it pretty much still the same? Lots of doctors looking to get out of network?
Definitely the conversations are coming up about them looking to get out of network now, as far as how many of them actually go through it once they do, you know, do some analysis. We always encourage them. It's such an emotional decision for them. You know, it's all tied to their finances and they're looking at making emotional decisions. We always try to explain to them, like, you have to make an educated decision and see how it's going to impact your practice. And it's not going to happen overnight. So we always say, like, take 6 months, like, prepare your patients for a 6 month transition. And you know, your plan, depending on what your contract states, it might be 45 days, it might be 90 days for you to get out of network for that policy, and have the conversation with your patients. Don't just have them, you know, be contacted by the dental plan and informed that you are no longer in network, or just send a letter out letting them know you're no longer in network. It has to be like a personal conversation with your patients one-on-one. So yeah, we just try to have them, like, take that emotional decision out of it.
I've seen some terrible letters that have been sent to patients. Like, I almost
Oh.
feel like I should publish like a hall of shame or, you know, something like that, because
Yeah.
the providers tend to write a letter because they are emotional. And I get it. I was on
Sure.
that
I do
side. I
too.
get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you can't say things like, we're getting screwed over. We're, you know, they haven't
Yeah.
paid us this, this, and this. And
Yeah.
in one of my latest newsletters, somebody shared with me a letter that they sent out, and then the corresponding letter from Delta saying, you need to retract this with
Yeah,
your patients because you
exactly.
just said a ton of lies. Like, they
Yeah.
haven't raised premiums in so long, and but the fact is they have, so you can't say that, you know, and all this other stuff. And so, but other than that, the patient, all the patient's doing is skimming all that anger to get to, what does this mean for me?
Sure.
I need to lead with that. But I think you're right. My preference is have the conversations, you know, in the practice. So have you seen getting out of network end up badly for a doctor, meaning like they get into trouble? Like, how can they avoid those calls?
Yeah. We always tell the story of one member that wanted to get out of network with a plan, but said, I don't want to do it the way that this doctor did because I'm now getting all of his patients. And so, you know, there is definitely a wrong way and a right way to be able to go out of network with a policy. Yeah.
So what did he, end up doing? Did he try to stay?
He ended up taking that 6 to 8 month period to be able to talk to the patient and make sure to talk to every single patient and track it and keep an eye on it and have the right kind of messaging to patients. You know, as far as the patient goes, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, and I always speak to it. Your patients really only have what their employer provides for them for a choice for their coverage. They don't have the ability to search different plans unless you're private, you're purchasing it privately, but they typically only have one choice. And so don't make them feel bad about the one choice that they have, you know? So we usually try to encourage that also too. And don't make any disparaging remarks about the dental plans. That's going to get you in some hot water and some cease and desist letters sent over to you also as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And I was happy this girl shared the cease and desist letter with me. And she's like, you need to let people know because we're totally terrified now. She was so scared.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, I think it ended fine. I mean, they retracted that. But I mean, that's egg on your face. You got to send a letter now to your patient saying, hey, we lied about your plan. Like, that's not cool.
we've seen some letters that have gone out where the practices are encouraging the patients to go to their employer and tell them to choose any other policy other than, you know, XYZ plan. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you can't do that. You can't do that. And you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. But you know, it doesn't sound like it's a bad thing to do until you get to the point where it's went against your contract, like to do that. Yeah. So that's
until that's you're standing in front of it doesn't sound like a bad idea until you're standing in front of a judge having to explain yourself.
Yeah, that's my goal in life. Never have to stand in front of a judge and explain myself. Like that's a good goal, I think. Right?
Exactly. You should. That's a great goal.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt or something. All right. So we talk about so much stuff. Was there anything else that you were like, hey, I got to tell Teresa about, and she just talked all over me. So is there anything?
No, I think we covered everything. I think we covered everything. It's so easy. You know, I was talking about having to record this podcast with you, and I was like, it's just so easy with her because it's just like a conversation that comes up. And just like you said, we're just coding nerds and dental insurance, dental plan nerds. So it's easy. It's an easy conversation.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek because I just came back from the CDT, the CMC, the Code Maintenance Committee.
Oh, yes.
I was blown out of my seat.
There's quite a few codes that are being proposed this coming year, aren't there?
Yeah, there were. And so they did the votes and everything. And I think that's going to be fine to tell you because it's not like there's a total moratorium on it. I mean, it's already out in some places anyways. So they actually, I fell out of my seat. I literally almost fell out of my seat. They passed a code for dermal fillers and a code for Botox. And
I'm
not
surprised.
And then I thought, oh, that sucks. Because
so for any of our California dentists, you still can't do it. It's beyond scope.
Well, there you go. That's good.
That's probably one of the number one calls that our regulatory compliance receives is regarding Botox. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is that because there's a lot of states that allow it? I mean, is there a big push from dentists to say, hey, can't we change this?
There is. Okay. There absolutely is. And unless you're an oral surgeon with an elective facial permit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's being used for dental treatment, not necessarily. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the conversations was, if you're going to do Botox, at least delineate it between therapeutic and cosmetic. Yeah. Because some of the self-insured plans, it was stated, some of the self-insured plans would allow benefits for therapeutic. But they didn't. So it's one code. So the default is going to be not covered. I worry the default's going to be not covered and then a fee is attached to it. And now we're beholden to a lower fee. And it's not per dosage or per site. It's one code with no units attached to it.
Oh, got it. Okay.
You know, I mean, my thought is they're going to have to redo that code for 26. So that's going to be a very interesting thing. But I'm always surprised. And that's something with the codes. Like, you can't just assume things aren't going to change. Like, these codes have been changing every year. We got the new sleep apnea category. Are you guys, that's in your scope out there, right? Like, There's a lot of dentists doing that.
They can create the appliance. They can't diagnose it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So they have to work hand in hand. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cause that's huge. I think that's a huge growing field. It has been for a while. I kind of just watch it cause medical billing scares me to death.
Yeah.
So do you guys tackle that at all at CDA?
We have some resources on it, but really it's beyond, I mean, I know what's in the coding companion book. I know the crosswalk from that. That's where I stay in my lane when it comes to that. But yeah, as far as the medical billing, we really don't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely when I'm retiring. If they ever change things over and say we have to do medical billing. No, I'm gone, Lisa. I'll be like calling you hey, what's going on? Does it still suck doing medical billing?
Yeah. Okay. I don't blame you. Yeah. Yeah. Let's try not to make it any more complicated. Yeah,
I know, right? We're trying to get dentists to code correctly using dental codes. Like the medical codes are just going to trip everybody up.
Yeah. So I always tell everybody it's an 18 to 24 month learning curve to be able to learn dental billing and to do it really proficiently. Mm-hmm. If we throw in the additional things that medical coding has, then yeah.
Yeah. And one thing that medical coding has, a lot of the hospitals and groups and stuff like they're to deal with Medicare and some of those programs, you have to have a certified dental code or certified professional coder on there, a CPC.
Yeah.
And there is no such thing in dentistry.
No, so I wish there was.
I wish there was. But the ADA, the most you can do is get an ADA certificate. But there's a lot that goes into it. So as far as that goes, like imagine the administrative burden of having to hire somebody certified just to do billing or just to do the coding, like dentists now are crying about overhead. Like that's going to hurt. So.
Well, also too, the huge upgrade to the practice management software to be able to handle that also too. I mean, think of, we talk about the CDT code books and how old some offices CDT code books are, how many offices are upgrading their practice management software yearly also too. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some of them that are running on, you know, Windows 6 at this point in time. So.
It's so funny when somebody comes up and I say, what software do you have? And then they're like, oh, you've never heard of it. And I'm like, oh no, I'm sure I haven't. I have heard of it, you know, after this long, right? Lisa, we've been doing this long time.
Yeah.
And then they'll say something and I'll go, wow, no, I've never heard of that. What is it? Like three offices in the country use that software.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Where did you get that from? Yeah.
That was free. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, listen, thanks for everything that you do. It's always a pleasure to have you on here. Tell people how to find you.
So CDA.org, and then I'm in practice management. My direct email, you guys are more than welcome to email me whenever you want, is lisa.greer, G-R-E-E-R, at CDA.org.
And if you are at CDA Presents, look her up and her team. Matt teaches there too.
Matt will be teaching courses. Teresa will be teaching courses. Michelle will be teaching courses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're all other Teresa, not me.
Yes.
You got another Teresa rock star, right?
So. Yeah. So she's TP. We always call you T Duncan.
T-Dunks. I have a friend that calls me T-Dunks. That's his name
perfect.
For me. So.
Perfect.
All right. Sounds good. So you are always welcome back anytime. You know that. And
thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. So people reach out to her, keep an eye out for her. And as always, I so appreciate that you spend your time with me.
We're all super busy. So thank you for making time for me today. The show notes will have any links that we referenced in the episode. You can also find links for my book, events, and my online insurance course, Dental Insurance Design and Management. I speak often around the country on management and insurance issues. Come hang out with me in one of my classes. I promise you'll laugh and learn.